From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our guest this hour is Monroe County Executive Cheryl DeNolfo, the county executive running for re-election this year. And earlier this month, we sat down with her opponent, Monroe County Clerk Adam Bello. Now, we seek to sit down with all candidates for prominent federal, state, and local offices. And the county executive's visit comes a day after she and her opponent traveled to Albany, both making the case that the state should not allow driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. They agree, at least in part, on that point. They disagree on many other issues. And this hour, it's a chance to explore those issues with the county executive. Cheryl DeNolfo, it's great to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, I mentioned before the hour began, yesterday, from my perspective, seemed a little weird. You and Adam Bello both in Albany, essentially making the same case regarding driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. Tell me a little bit about your position, first of all, and we'll kind of talk about whether there might be some distinctions there.
Well, sure. The Assembly passed the legislation last week, and I was disappointed in that Monroe County voices hadn't been really heard in Albany. So leaders lead, and I decided that it would be a good thing to do to go to Albany and reach out and invite Adam Bello to join me, a Democrat and a Republican, to express whatever concerns he might have and also my position on behalf of Monroe County residents, as well as certainly residents from most of Western New York. Certainly downstate as well. We're seeing the same opposition in the Long Island area and others as well. And my position was, Evan, that just as it was in 2007 when I led the county clerk's rally against licenses for those who are here illegally or without documentation, and at that time, shoulder to shoulder, Democrats and Republicans stood. Governor Spitzer at that time had proposed the regulation to allow licensing for illegal immigrants. And within about a 2 months time span, that proposal was removed from consideration. Now, here we are again in 2019 with a similar situation. And I really felt that because Monroe County's voice had not really been heard or expressed at that point, that again, to try to lead that effort, to let our Albany representatives know how we felt. So we went to Albany. Certainly had some very, very productive meetings with many senators, Senator Funke, Senator Razenhofer, Pam Helming, Joe Robach, among many others, Senator Ort. Adam was with me, and we both expressed what our points were. To be sure, one of the reasons I was there was to let our Albany representatives know, and they agreed with us, that to provide licenses to those who are here illegally really rewards bad behavior. We agreed that there is a federal immigration problem. Certainly, I would encourage our congressional representatives to, again, sit shoulder to shoulder, roll up their sleeves, Democrats, Republicans, and figure out the immigration situation in the United States once and for all. But providing licenses to those who are here illegally, have entered the country illegally, I believe is unfair to our citizens who follow the rules, and certainly not a proper way to proceed. Mr. Bello was concerned about the processing of documentation, and he raised those concerns as well. You know, it's a very busy time in Albany right now. Certainly, we were just discussing that the legislature is in session starting in January, and here it is mid-June, and a flurry of activity in the last 3 days. So I was very grateful to our delegation in Albany who took the time to meet with us and have those conversations. I was disappointed, however, our office had reached out to the majority leader, Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is the majority leader of the Senate, a Democrat. She was advised that I was going to Albany with a Democrat, Adam Bello, and unfortunately she wasn't able to fit us in to speak with us. And that's really unfortunate because issues of great importance were being discussed in Albany yesterday, and everybody's point of view has to be heard, and I thought that was an unfortunate circumstance. But all in all, the meetings were very productive. I also had an opportunity to speak with some of our assembly representatives. I spoke with a representative, the chief of staff for Assemblyman Gantz, also with Jamie Romeo and others, about other issues that are of concern to Monroe County that we have been talking about throughout this legislative session, but wanted to remind them that if these things weren't done this year, that they need to, think about them for next year. You know, certainly the state's rate on early intervention rates and also on the Excel Center and education issues.
All right. So on the subject of the licenses, it was Democrats in the state legislature who carried it through the Assembly, as you said last week. The Senate did pass ultimately to pass it. The governor has said that it would be signed. Are you surprised that your opponent in this race essentially joined your position on this?
Well, you know, I was glad that he joined with me. That was why I reached out. This is putting politics aside. And, you know, I had been reached out to by constituents saying, what is going on? You know, this is policy that we don't agree with. And who is going to be expressing to our Albany legislators what our beliefs are, to our governor, what our beliefs are, what Monroe County is feeling, and what Monroe County wants. So that was the reason that I certainly went to Albany to express those views. But to make sure that the county clerk who issues driver's licenses had the opportunity as well to come and also to show our Albany delegation and the representatives there, not just the ones from Rochester, but from all over New York State, that when issues are that important, you have to put politics aside and go Democrat and Republican and express your views.
He has said if it were passed that as county clerk, he would not refuse to enforce the law. His colleagues, for example, in Erie County have said the opposite, that they may not enforce it. If you were the county clerk, would you enforce this, and do you think he should?
Well, a couple of things there. First of all, after it passed last night, I immediately put out a statement asking the governor not to sign it and to veto it. I think there are serious issues and ramifications of that legislation. As we look at the legislation as it currently stands, significant issues of public safety, you know, for certain, there is written into the law that when somebody who gets a license without being here legally, their information cannot be shared with law enforcement. And so you think about the public safety aspect of that for our law enforcement officers. Our sheriffs have spoken out against the legislation. New York State Police, many of them, have spoken out against the legislation. Implementation is going to be interesting, trying to verify who people are. People who are in this country illegally can go to the consulate and purchase an ID saying that they're from a different country. Certainly, there's a lot of fraud that goes into foreign documentation. I know that from my days as county clerk. So, again, lots of interesting questions. What happens with potentially voter fraud? How is the Board of Elections going to keep track of if somebody is permitted to vote because they're legal citizens or not? So as we go forward, and we're going to be weighing options in Monroe County as to what to do next. I was disappointed that the governor didn't take a deep breath and step back and really analyze, you know, some of the ramifications of the law. The way I understand it, what he was most concerned about was whether law enforcement could access information about those who are here without legal presence because he didn't want them to be potentially deported. But I think it presents a very interesting dynamic now that this has become law. You know, for the line staff who work in the DMV offices, I know that many of them have very strong feelings about this issue. You know, certainly you have federal laws on immigration, and now we have a competing state law. So there's going to be, I think, a lot to talk about. And I think you're going to see that coming forward. So before we make a decision on how to implement, what to implement, which is 6 months down the road, a lot of issues that need to be hashed out and potentially other actions that can be taken.
Fair to say that's not a firm yes or no, though. As you say, there's more conversations to be had over the next 6 months before you decide whether you think it ought to be enforced.
Well, certainly, you know, Mr. Bella will be in a position to decide whether his office is going to issue licenses to those who are here illegally or not. But I would say that between now and then, I'm certainly looking at, from a county perspective, what could be done, what should be done as we move forward.
All right. Let's talk about some of the other issues that have come up recently. Special education funding and pre-K. It can be confusing for people because there is a state component of this and there's a county component. The state component for so-called early intervention services, in other words, the state sets reimbursement rates. You have called on the state to do more. Countless providers we've talked to agree with you. The Children's Agenda tells us they largely agree with you on that. The county has control over reimbursement rates for pre-K special ed funding, not everything, but its own sort of department of services. And back in March, you announced an across-the-board rate increase of 15% for what the county funds, for what the county can control in terms of the rates, not the state portion. And that was at a time when providers are at a risk of shutting down. And a couple of months later, when providers were notified about the new reimbursement rates, some discovered it wouldn't necessarily be a 15% increase. And they said, well, you said it was across the board. Help us see because they felt like people like Heather Hansen, who was on this program, Chief Operating Officer of Step by Step Development Services, say she feels that providers were led to believe one thing by the county when it was another thing that was happening. So help us understand.
Sure. Certainly, investment in children and families has been one of my top priorities since I became county executive. There is no better investment than making sure that our families and our children have the best opportunity of success in life here in Monroe County. And that really does start at birth. And so when we look at services to children, and let's focus on from birth to age five, it's a very complex situation. And I think that you're well versed in it, certainly, Evan. But when people say, you know, what services are provided, who provides them, and how is this going to impact our children and families, I want your listening audience to know that we take that responsibility. I take that responsibility very, very seriously. And I will tell you that when I tackled this issue of funding for special education before a child enters into school, many people said to me, you know what, that is a very, very difficult issue. People have been trying to tackle that forever. It's not just an issue in Monroe County. It is a statewide issue. In fact, there are counties in the state of New York that simply do not provide special education, preschool special education services because they don't have the wherewithal to do it. They don't have the personnel to do it, and they just walk away. So knowing that my priorities is to make sure that our families and our kids have the opportunity to succeed and to be all that they can be, I tackled the problem that is, again, not just a Monroe County problem, but a statewide problem. And some might say, you know, well, that is a keg of dynamite to attack. But that's what I do. I see issues, I roll up my sleeves, and I try to come to a resolution of those issues so that we have the best outcomes for the families and kids here in Monroe County. So by that, as a way of background, there's two different groups that we need to look at. One is early intervention. So early intervention is basically for children who are born up to age three, and then there's preschool special education that's ages 3 to 5. Early intervention is something that's controlled by the state of New York. So for people who are listening, just to make sure, a lot of times we hear preschool special education lumped all together as one big group, but it's two distinct groups. So on the early intervention, interestingly, back in 2011, the state of New York actually cut the rates that were to be paid to the service providers. Now, the state controls the rates for early intervention, so birth to age three. So here back in 2011, they really start this situation, this in motion, by cutting the rates for service providers. Now, on that piece alone, I went to Albany and actually sat down with the budget director of the state of New York, Robert Mojica. He is a very, very powerful man. He controls the budget, you know, what is being discussed with the governor, and sat with him and said, it is really very unfortunate. It shocks the conscience that the state would actually cut the rate back in 2011 for these service providers, because what happens is kids go without services in their earliest years. And then when they finally do get services, some of the situations and that could have been rectified have now been exacerbated. So we had a lot of fruitful discussion about that. The state did increase the rate for early intervention by 5%. I asked for 15% because that's what advocates were telling me they needed, and that's what we were going to do in the county of Monroe. I wanted to make sure that the state matched us. So they did raise the rates by 5%. It's a start, but it's certainly, certainly not enough. But I will tell you that the budget director told me if I hadn't been in Albany and pushing, they wouldn't have done that, not even the 5%. So looking forward, it was one of the things I talked about in Albany yesterday with Assemblymember Romeo and also with David Gantz, Chief of Staff, telling them that we needed those rates to go higher for early intervention. Now, preschool special education, the county controls the rates on some of the services provided, like occupational therapy, speech therapy, physical therapy are the big three that people would be familiar with. And back in March, I announced that the county would be increasing across the board the rates by 15%. I will tell you that that discussion and increasing the rates and how to go about that had been discussed for just about a year at that time. There's a group called Providers in Partnership, so it's the PIP Council, that is made up of representatives of providers and also the county to talk about services that kids need, how to go about funding those services and providing those services as well. And I was really proud to announce the 15% across the board, a rate increase, which we did. And it becomes very complicated in the standpoint of the 15% rate increase, when we look at providing services, a little bit more information, there are two different rates that were established this year. One is the individual rate. So if you see an individual child, there is a rate that we increased by 15%.
One-on-one services.
One-on-one. So you have a child, the child needs speech therapy. The provider gets a 15% increase for the individual rate. We also established for the first time what is called a group rate. And the group rate means just what you think it would mean. A group is more than one. So if you have two children, doesn't have to be from the same family, but let's say you have two children who both need speech therapy, but they could benefit from being in a group and receiving those services at the same time. Might be for socialization, interaction, and that to identify a child as having individual services or group services, the county doesn't do that. The school district does that. So they're assessed and they get categorized as receiving individual therapy and services or group services. That by way of background, we established a group rate to help incentivize certainly seeing more children who are in this group situation, but knowing that in a group situation, the group rate would only be applicable for two or more children. I think that there was some confusion that needed to be clarified on what do we mean, what does the word group mean? To me, it always meant group is more than one. You can't have a group of one. So group means two or more. We did have that clarification as well with our service providers. And I hope that this solves any concerns that they might have. But this, again, has been discussed for more than a year with our service providers on, you know, what can we do better? What can we do differently to ensure that our kids get the services that they need, but equally important that the providers stay in the business?
But this is not the first time that we've had. There's always been group services and one-on-one services. It's the first time you've separated one-on-one and group in terms of reimbursement rates. And the reimbursement rates are 15% increased for one-on-one, but not for group. So how do you say that's across the board? You've kind of narrowed the board.
Well, not correct, Evan, because the county has never had an authorized group rate, never before. This is the first time. And, you know, certainly that had been discussed on we should have a group rate. And you think about individual versus group rate. So if an individual rate, it's by a half hour, is approximately $60 a half an hour for an individual, and a group rate is approximately $54 per child, mm-hmm. and you have two children, 52 or 50, I believe it's 52, mm-hmm. $52. So that's $104 per half hour if you're seeing two children. If you're seeing three children, you know, three times 52. So that's a significant amount of pay for seeing more than one child. And the idea is also not only to make sure that our kids are getting the services that they need, but if there is an opportunity for interaction with our kids to help them develop and grow, then we should avail ourselves of that opportunity because it also provides an opportunity for more kids to be seen.
I'm certainly not an expert in this. I defer to the providers themselves, people like Pete Nabosny at the Children's Agenda, who said that they felt like this was sleight of hand. And the providers tell me that until mid-May, they thought they were getting one rate and what they're getting is less. Why was there confusion? Why didn't the providers know?
It's interesting because they are part of the council, and I honestly think it was maybe a misunderstanding because when I announced the 15% across the board at the legislature meeting, we handed out all of the rates. Everything was there, and it was months later.
To the media and to the legislators, right?
To the media and the legislatures, and certainly our preschool operators who had been at the legislature, they come to the legislature every single meeting, which is great. It's always good to hear the concerns of citizens, and I'm always happy to speak with them. In fact, there were many times that I would just go out into the audience and speak with our providers, see how they were doing and how we could continue to work together. But certainly the providers through our partnership, our PIP council, they were well aware of what those rates were going to be in the establishment of the rates. So we have been consistent in saying that there's going to be a group rate for the first time. We thought we had consensus on that. And certainly within the last few weeks, there was some issue that arose on what does the meaning of group mean and how will the providers be paid. And we did reach back out and made the clarification that a group rate only applies if there's more than one child. And I think that was a point of confusion. And to round out my answer, when you say they felt that they weren't getting the across-the-board rate, I think they were under the misperception that if a child is to be in a group, so, you know, Jennifer is going to receive group services. If Jennifer shows up and there's only one person, I believe that the providers might have been under the impression that they would then get a group rate even though there was one child in front of them.
And you're saying that's not correct.
That is not the case. They will get the full rate, not the group rate.
Okay, then the last question on this then is, because by the way, I mean, you're right, the media had these packets. Democrats in the legislature who are now complaining had those packets, and they've pretty much all admitted to us they didn't read them. So, I mean, I don't know why your political opponent didn't read the documents, but he didn't. I didn't. I mean, that's my fault. But if there is a miscommunication, if I'm talking to providers who are doing these work for our children in this community, and they say, boy, our reimbursement rate's lower than we thought a couple of months ago, who do you blame for that?
There's no blame there. It's
somebody's fault. There's a miscommunication.
It's very complicated. I know that we were above board. There was no sleight of hand. We were transparent. We were working with the council for the last year, talking about group rates, talking about what we can do to improve outcomes for kids. So this has been a very collaborative process. You know, I actually invited the Children's Agenda to come to Albany with me, and we did the same thing. Came to Albany, talked to the New York State Association of Counties, talked to representatives in Albany about how important this issue is. So we've been leading in this area as well. And I think the bottom line is the commitment to for extra dollars in Monroe County for our preschool special education programs. You know, we committed to up to another $1 million on top of the almost $26 million that we currently provide from the taxes we collect here in Monroe County, and a great investment, obviously, but we've committed additional dollars. So the proof's in the pudding. You know, we've got the money to continue to ensure best outcomes for our kids, but it's very complicated. And the door's always open. The council meets frequently with our providers, certainly with our professionals from the County of Monroe, to ensure that any issues in implementation or outcomes we can do together, we will.
How can you? How are you going to find the $1 million or so? Maybe 800,000, maybe a million to pay for that.
Well, certainly, we always make adjustments mid-year as we look at revenues that we're receiving, things that we've paid for, services that we've provided, and as we budget, we always have a little bit of a cushion in case there's any emergency that arises or a need that we need to provide for, or one that is as important as our children and families. So we will make that adjustment mid-year. And then when I prepare our budget for next year, you will see an appropriation with an increase in the budget for preschool special education services. But the bottom line is, Evan, that when I look at this a situation, again, I saw a need investing in children and families. I heard what the advocates were saying, and I said, we got to get this done. So you roll up your sleeves and you get it done. You know, it takes a lot of determination. It takes guts because it's a very complicated issue. And as I have said to the advocates, we will continue to advocate for our kids. But I also ask them to continue to work with me to advocate at the state level. Because now what we're seeing is, since our rates are going up, if you were running a business, as much as you want to be philanthropic and really help our kids and do the right thing, compassionate, it is about economics too. And so businesses have to remain open. And if the state isn't going to increase their rates, but the county has increased rates on the other end of preschool education, perhaps providers might make a different choice. So we need to make sure that the state raises their rates so that kids are receiving services from the onset. And I'll leave you with this thought. When I sat with Robert Mojica, the budget director, you know, he talks about dollars and cents because he's the budget director, right? He said, Cheryl, how would you expect me to pay this? And I said, you know what? Obviously, what's most important is the outcome for our kids. That's most important. But if you want to take that off the table and talk about dollars and cents, you can look at it this way. The state can pay now when kids are born and provide the services they need. And hopefully by the time they get to school, when they enter kindergarten and first grade, perhaps the services that they need might be reduced a little bit. Or you can not pay now when kids are born and their brains are developing, and that's when most development happens, as we know, in those early formative years. And then when the kids get to school, you can pay a lot more. And he understood that. And I said, so, you know, next year when you're looking at the budget, you did 5% this year, you should match Monroe County and go to 15.
And we will, by the way, to listeners, follow up on that point with the members of the delegation at the state level, because that is where there is a lot of agreement that New York State could do more and hasn't done a whole lot for years on this issue. So we'll certainly follow that up with the members of the delegation. Cheryl Donolfo is the Monroe County executive who is running for reelection. You heard her opponent, who is the Monroe County clerk, Adam Bello, on this program earlier this month. Now, the county clerk had some critical things to say regarding county taxes. And I know Cheryl Donolfo not only ran her last campaign, but is had some very strong feelings on taxes, the tax rate, her plans for the county. And after our only break of the hour, we're going to talk county taxes and a lot more with Cheryl Donolfo next. Coming up in our second hour, for the first time in 40 years, the National Convention for the Hearing Loss Association of America will be held in Rochester. We'll talk about why, and you're going to hear some remarkable personal stories about the impact of hearing loss during adult life and some things that can happen to allow people to counter it, to reclaim parts of their life. We'll talk about that next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Cheryl Donolfo is the Monroe County executive who is running for another term, been in county government for a number of years now, and she is running against Adam Bello, who is the county clerk ever since Cheryl Donolfo became the county executive. So we will see how that race goes here, and we want to let our listeners know we always post the audio of these conversations, so before you vote, you can compare the candidates at length. And the county clerk told us that just keeping the tax rate the same or even reducing the actual tax rate doesn't mean that people aren't seeing tax increases. Here's the question he asked. He said, if your taxes are higher this year than last year, if you are paying the county more in tax money this year than last year, have you had a tax increase or not? And he said that should be the fundamental question. Do you think that's a fair way to ask the question, Cheryl?
I do not, Evan. You know, interestingly, when you're managing a budget and you're managing the number of services that the county provides, one of the things that you absolutely have to look at is that 85% of the services that we provide here locally in the county of Monroe are actually mandated services from the state of New York. So before we even look at the rest of our budget, we really have about 15% of the taxpayer dollars that we collect to provide for other services in this community. So 15%. Imagine if you were running your household and you sat down with your family and were trying to figure out your budget and said, well, you know what, for every dollar that we bring in collectively as a unit in our family, we can only really control 15 cents. That's a very interesting pattern that we have here in the state of New York, and it's unfortunate that the state, year after year after year, asks the counties and the local municipalities to do more to provide services that we may or may not even have a voice in. But again, push down from Albany, it's significant. And I will tell you that if the state took over some of the programs that they force the counties to pay for, not just in Monroe County, but all over the state of New York, our property taxes would be a heck of a lot lower. So with that, by way of background, what we do in the county, what I do as the county executive, is control what I can control. And so when we looked at the property tax rate, for the first time in over a decade, we actually cut the property tax rate by 10 cents from $8.99 per $1,000 of assessed value to $8.89 per $1,000 of assessed value. That is significant. That is significant. When is the last time that you can recall that your property tax rate went down and your services were still there? So as the county executive preparing a budget and looking at the tax structure, what I did was look at what we control and what could we do as a county government to help ease the burden for our families and our businesses here in the county of Monroe. New York State is one of the most overtaxed, overburdened states in the country. And, you know, that's well known because of what happens on a statewide level. But on a countywide level, we watch the purse strings like you do at your house to make sure that we are helping our families and our businesses continue to grow and expand, provide jobs for our local residents. And one of the factors is the tax rate. So we lowered the tax rate for the first time historically in over a decade. And that's something that I'm proud of. But when folks look at their property taxes, most people get a tax bill that has many components. Certainly, your tax bill also includes school district taxes, which I know you know this, but the county does not control that. That is a separate vote by municipality, and those rates vary from town to town. They're always going up, and that's part of the tax bill that people receive. The other component that the county certainly cannot control, and that's the property assessment that each home has that is controlled by the local municipality, the towns, the city, et cetera, not the county. So when you look at your tax bill, all of those numbers are grouped together. But the bottom line is we control what we can control, and that's the property tax rate. And I'm very happy that because of the good financials ground that we have provided to the residents and the taxpayers of Monroe County, that we were able to lower the tax rate.
Well, someone like Sam in Brighton, let's just get a little lesson on taxes. Sam has a comment he wants to make. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Cheryl. So I live in Brighton, and I'm actually, you know, your explanation is starting to make sense to me, but I was going to call and ask, my assessment went up, and my town supervisor, Bill Mealy, is saying that he cut taxes by cutting the tax rate, and you're saying the same thing, that you're cutting the tax rate. So I guess I don't understand how somebody like Adam Bello can run around saying that you raise taxes when you both cut the tax rate. That just seems a little hypocritical. I don't know. Can you explain that a little more for me?
Sam, thanks. Go ahead.
Sam, I appreciate the question. And I'm glad that you're calling from the town of Brighton because Bill Mealy is a Democrat supervisor and Cheryl Donolfo is a Republican county executive. And we're saying the exact same thing. Cutting the property tax rate is something that can be controlled, you know, by the county executive. And if the town of Brighton also reduced its property tax rate and reduced taxes, congratulations. But certainly the other component that I think certainly Brighton is grappling with this right now is the school budget and the amount of taxes that perhaps will be going up significantly in the town of Brighton because of the taxes. But, you know, people have to look at that and make a decision, go out to vote on their school budget, which is a significant component of property tax.
All right, let's talk a little bit about economic development and job growth. And there's something that a lot of our listeners would know as Comita. It used to be called Comita. Now it's called Imagine Monroe. And one of the things that your opponent has criticized is that it's not transparent enough, and there's way too much green lighting of projects where we don't have a guarantee of job growth. And interestingly enough, we had Don Riley, the vice president of Mark IV and a longtime leader in local Republican politics, on the show just a couple of weeks ago. He says the county's IDA hands out tax breaks too frequently and too easily, and too often the promise of jobs are not fulfilled. This is Don Riley. Let's just listen a little bit what he was saying there.
I think they're too loose, and they should tighten them up. It shouldn't be automatic money. And I mean, there was a law firm when Comita started out years ago that got millions of dollars for computers. And it can't be jobs that they'd have anyway. Not all projects should automatically qualify. There's too much of that automatic qualification.
That's Don Riley. What do you say to Don there?
Well, I think that Don certainly makes a point on what do we do with economic development and what does that look like in the county of Monroe. Well, when I look at economic development in the county of Monroe over the last 3.5 years, we've done significant reform measures with economic development that I'm very proud of. And we've taken a relook and a reexamination on how we go about economic development. And certainly a different focus over the last 3 years. As you know, our Economic Development Council is called Imagine Monroe, and there's a reason for that. Imagine Monroe, imagine the possibilities, imagine what we can do to provide job growth, imagine what we can do working together to have our local businesses continue to stay in Monroe County, expand in Monroe County. Imagine what we can do to help provide good paying career opportunities for people who are here locally. Imagine what we could do to provide skills training for our workers that our companies are looking to hire. Many, many jobs that we work with businesses all over the community to make sure that they have the skilled workforce that they need. So we're looking at a different way of economic development here in Monroe County. The harsh reality, however, is that, again, this is the state of New York. And, you know, businesses in general are overburdened and overregulated by the state. And that is a disincentive for companies to come here to New York State, not just Monroe County, but New York State. So it's always a challenge when we are faced with, again, overregulated, overtaxed New York State policies. So in comes the Economic Development Council. And I sat down with our team and said, we have to do all that we can to make sure that local people are working locally, to make sure that local companies have the opportunity to prosper, and also to make sure that companies that are looking at Rochester, that are looking at Monroe County, say yes to Monroe County and come to Monroe County. And I think that our record, in fact, I know that our record speaks for itself, that over the last 3.5 years, we've either created or retained over 20,000 jobs here in the county of Monroe. And we have made some tremendous strides at our workforce development piece, again, fueled through economic development. It's not just about, as Mr. Riley said, it's not just about what are you providing as incentives to companies, but rethinking how we go about doing business. And one of the focuses that we've had with our economic development engine is making sure that we are providing job training for companies that are here or coming here. And I will tell you that the workforce development piece that we have put together through our economic development agency, Imagine Monroe, are now being recognized, is now being recognized as a national model for workforce development in our partnership with MCC. And that's part of rethinking about economic development. And if you don't mind, I wanted to touch base a little bit about that. And it's a program that I'm very, very proud of. We started it here in Monroe County just a few short years ago. Program is called Ladders Up. And it's a custom-made, tailored workforce development tool that we sat down with Dr. Ann Kress and Todd Oldham, who runs their workforce development agency. She's phenomenal, but he is really, really a gem in this community. And he works closely with Jeff Adair, our economic development director, and our team to put together a program to match local workers with employers, providing the skills that those employers need based on our just going out and talking to company after company. We've talked to over 500 companies in the last 3.5 years. What do you need? What kind of skilled employees do you need? And then we actually tailor programs for companies so that they can get the employees that they need. And there's also a promise of a job at the end of the program. So, for example, when you think about a company like Datto, great company here locally in Rochester, RIT graduate, great success story. That's our largest program so far. They needed software developers. And so through Ladders Up, Datto had some skin in the game, helped pay for the program. MCC provided the training that Datto needed. We provided the incentives to put these groups together. And out of that workforce development piece, 36 software developers took the courses that we sat down and developed again in conjunction with MCC. 36 career-oriented members of Monroe County, living in Monroe County, buying a house in Monroe County, and contributing to a great company, Datto, are now working at that company, helping them to prosper and helping their families to prosper as well. We've done this same program over and over again. Almost 800 participants in the last 2 years have gone through Ladders Up, are successfully employed, have the skill set that they need to be successful. And equally important, companies in optics and manufacturing and the construction industry are getting the employees that they need to remain successful and to expand here in the county of Monroe. And just a few weeks ago, the Ladders Up program was mentioned in the Aspen Institute, where MCC received an award, one of the five community colleges in the country to get an award noted that they are the workforce playbook for delivering excellent training for workers in the country. So national award for a program that simple thinking outside the box, working with MCC, working with workforce development to make sure that we got the job done for our local companies as well as our local employees as well. We've done this over and over again. You know, certainly had an announcement recently about ITX, a software development company that provides online banking and retirement programs for companies like Paychex and U of R, for example. They had needs from big things like training more skilled workers. We provided our ladders up training to small but important things like where's the parking for our large workforce development. And they're going to undergo a $1.2 million expansion in downtown Rochester, saving 50 local jobs and adding many more. So these are ways that we work with companies. What do you need? And it's not always what people equate with economic development. It's very simple things like workforce development, job training, location. We help provide locations, working with other partners like GRE to access resources as well, perhaps small business loans. Those are all kinds of things that we can do collectively. And as a matter of fact, in the next couple of months, we'll be opening up our new Jobs on Main facility that's diagonally across the street from the county office building right in downtown Rochester. That is a one-stop shop, hands-on. Pull out all the troops and put your boots on the ground and make sure that we are always there for our local businesses to answer those needs that they have. Don't even need an appointment. You come in and talk with us so we can help you be successful. And we also use that as a tool for recruiting other companies to come into Rochester.
Let me read an email from Karen Frutiger in Brighton. Karen says, the Seneca Park Zoo's mission, as stated on its website, says the Seneca Park Zoo inspires our community to connect, care for, and conserve wildlife and wild places. But Karen goes on to say, I don't find any mention of climate change on the zoo's webpage. I'd like to know what Cheryl Donolfo's position is in regards to the county zoo's role to educate Monroe County residents on climate change's effects on wildlife. Are there plans for this topic to be added to the zoo's educational offerings? That's from Karen.
Well, Karen, I really appreciate the question that you asked about the Seneca Park Zoo, because first of all, the zoo's mission is a very, very important mission. Certainly, education, conservation, protecting our earth are lofty mission statements, but they're more than statements, they're action items, right? I always believe in action. And when we looked at what we're doing at the Seneca Park Zoo, certainly to upgrade and improve the Seneca Park Zoo for our residents to enjoy nice quality of life feature in Monroe County. And certainly when you know, we're talking about why do people live in Monroe County? Why do you want to come to Monroe County? People are always interested in the quality of life. And certainly the zoo is an important factor in contributing to the excellent quality of life that we have here in Monroe County. But equally important, the zoo provides a unique opportunity for the visitors to the Seneca Park Zoo, from our youngest visitors, our kids who come in, to our most experienced visitors and those who are coming in as a parent or a grandparent like myself. It's open to everybody. There's always something to learn. And that's part of our mission, is to make sure that we're providing not only an opportunity to have a nice time, to enjoy yourself, which is obviously very important, but also to learn something when you're there. And as we looked at the improvements made at the zoo, those were things that we looked at from a standpoint of what are we doing to make sure that we're protecting our animals? What are we doing to ensure that we're making sure that species don't become extinct? So there's certainly a program that we share with resources from throughout the country under the direction of our zoo director, Larry Staub, and our great veterinarian, our Dr. Louis DeVincente. He's wonderful. We have embarked on very innovative ways to make sure that we are increasing the animal population and making sure that our animals are provided for, but also that the populations increase, like polar bears, for example, would be a very good example. But also that we're teaching people about the environment, right? And that is part of what we do every single day in some of the classes that we provide and some of the volunteers who are throughout the zoo providing educational opportunities. But Karen, I heard what you said, And I agree with you. I can see an update to the website to make sure that we talk about protecting our environment. Very, very important, not just for the people who live here now, but certainly for our kids and grandkids to make sure that this earth is preserved for all of us to enjoy for many, many, many more years.
And there's been debate about if climate is a local job or a national job. The city of Rochester has been a little bit more aggressive about putting together a climate action plan. Should the county have one? Do you have any plans for that?
We actually have a sustainability team, Evan, so I'm really glad you asked about that. Our team, made up of our Department of Environmental Services and other parts of our county government, they meet and talk and put together plans for what can we do better as a county government to ensure that we're doing all that we can do to protect this earth and to conserve it. I'm a firm believer that everybody plays a role in that regard. So whether it's in your home, recycling, whether it's in your workplace, by not using plastic water bottles, for example, it would be a good example. And to what we do in county government. And so one of the things that we have done in county government is we have actually done a review of our county-owned facilities to make sure that we aren't increasing the carbon footprint by better insulating, better protecting, doing some remedial work that needs to be done, and we're in the process of doing that to make sure that we're more energy efficient. So county responsibility, county action plan, part of our sustainability team. Our LED lighting, replacement of lights throughout 490, 390, 590, that's a project, a $25 million project that we are undergoing. Our solar panel parks that we have in many locations throughout the county of Monroe. These are all things that we're doing, initiatives that we've taken under my leadership, recognizing, of course, the importance of conservation and protection of the environment.
Now, there's some changes in Republican politics locally. Your deputy county executive, Bill Napier, moving into the seat, leading the local Republican Party. Bill Rylick, supervisor of the town of Greece, stepping off of that position. Obviously, you know both men well. I just got a couple quick questions about that. First of all, a lot of people have, some of the mumbles have been, well, you know, Bill Napier is very close with Cheryl. They work together. Is that something you wanted? Is this a change that you've been pushing for?
Well, certainly this is a change that I think is a real good result for everybody. Bill Rylick was a wonderful leader of the Republican Party, and under his leadership, many, many people rose to prominence in the Republican Party, and he did an excellent job as the leader of the party. Bill Rylick is the supervisor of the fifth largest town in the state of New York, almost 100,000 people in the town of Greece. A tremendously responsible job. And I'm so glad that he is the supervisor there, providing great quality of life and services to the people there. You know, he's got a heck of a battle on his hands right now with the lakefront, doing all that he can to protect the residents of the town of Greece, the businesses of the town of Greece, and those who are visiting the town of Greece as well. So with this change, Bill Rylick is now focusing full time on the town of Greece. And Greece being a very, very important part of Monroe County, the largest population, I'm glad that he is making sure that Greece is being all that it can be and getting even better.
It's the largest population outside of Rochester. I mean, Rochester's in the county.
Rochester's in the county, 225,000,
yeah.
Right? So outside of the city of Rochester,
yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Largest town. But, you know, and Bill Napier, Bill, I have a lot of respect for him as well. Bill Napier, highly intelligent, knows government inside and out, has worked in federal government, knows state government, knows local government, wealth of information, is very well connected with all of the legislatures, has a great relationship with the legislators on both sides of the aisle. He has stepped into the role, left county government, and has stepped into the role as the leader of the Monroe County Republican Party. The Monroe County Republican Party is a party for everyone. And Bill is working, as he always has, in the relationships that he has with our elected officials on both sides of the aisle and throughout the county of Monroe. So Bill has accepted the opportunity to become the chairman. And I expect that the Monroe County Republican Party will continue to provide excellent government by electing excellent qualified candidates and reelecting those who have done a good job for this community.
By the last 80 seconds, then, the one thing that I think, when you look at the Board of Education, Board of Elections numbers on registration, the Monroe County Republican Party and registered voters are much older on the Republican side. It's twice as many Democrats are younger, 18 to 34, as Republicans, twice as many Republicans over the age of 65 than Democrats. Why do you think that is, and how do you change that? Does that concern you?
Well, interestingly, I have run in presidential years many times as county clerk and have thankfully been successful. I believe strongly that and meeting with voters for many, many years. People here in Monroe County, they might be affiliated with a political party, but when they get into the voting booth, they vote for the person that they think is going to do the best job. So while party labels are important because people are registered in various parties for sure, here in Monroe County, we find a number of people who are either registered blank, unaffiliated with any party, and that's a significant number. Or behind closed doors, they vote for the person they believe is doing the best job. They vote for the person. And I'm hopeful that my record will speak for itself. I've been trying to do my very best for the people in the community of Monroe. I always believe this, and I've believed it forever. Serving the public is about being a public servant. So public service, people first, community first, and everything else just works out fine.
Where would you like people to go online and learn more about your record and your work?
You can go online at CherylDinolfo.com, or you can check me out on Facebook.
CherylDinolfo.com, the county executive running for re-election. And now you've heard her opponent Adam Bello in this race. I suspect before November, we'll sit down with them again. We'll find some time. I know everyone's schedules are busy, but we always appreciate and are grateful for your time.
And I appreciate the time to be on the show, Evan. But most importantly, I appreciate the opportunity to serve the great people of Monroe County.
Cheryl Dinolfo on Connections. Short break, more coming up.